with the primary purpose of destruction. An instrument that will end its career in its own type of glorious crescendo, demolishing building or brick or structure of steel, and perhaps producing as its supreme triumph in its explosion the agonized cry of the hurt human being. You have heard the prototype of a deadly weapon. Goethe said, "Every man hears only what he understands." Hank Greenberg, Ed Lopat, and a black cat combined to make news this week. The Cleveland Indians are a baseball club. Ed Lopat is a pitcher for the New York Yankees. The Cleveland team has not been able to win a ball game from Ed Lopat since June 19, 1949. After 11 straight losses to Lopat, Hank Greenberg, general manager of the Indians, decided that something drastic would have to be done. As Greenberg put it,
"About a week ago, a Cleveland Indian fan wrote a letter telling him the way to beat Ed Lopat is to come up with a novel idea or sponsor a contest and give a prize to the person who could best suggest on how to beat this pitcher that's been giving us all the trouble. The prize-winning suggestion was offered by a gentleman who stated that he thought it was nothing more than a superstition, and that if we had the rabbit's feet out at home plate and he would provide the live rabbits as well as distribute some 15,000 rabbit's feet to the spectators or as they came through the turnstiles."
This plot to beat Lopat, quite by coincidence, of course, jammed the ballpark. The rabbit's feet, incidentally, were flown in from New York. Just before play ball, there were added festivities.
"Looking down on the field, the ground crew had just brought a box out to the pitcher's mound, opened the box, and two or three rabbits jumping out. The ground crew out there with that box, and they're trying to chase the rabbits around the infield."
The Yankees scored two runs in their half of the first. Then Lopat took the mound to find a 10th Indian in the Cleveland lineup.
"Well, a fan has just come out of the stands, and he has a little black cat with him, and he drops it there, and he's going to throw a ball into the plate. Umpires go over and try to help him out. He brought a little black kitten out and dropped it right there at Lopat's feet. He's getting a nice hand from the crowd."
From there on in, Lopat was in trouble. With two out and two men on, the cat, the 15,000 rabbit's feet, and the Indians proved to be too much for the undefeated Mr. Lopat.
Last half of the first with two out. Lopat makes ready. He pitches. It's swung on. A fly ball going into left field. Going back for it is Woodling. Still going back. It's going for a home run.
Over cheers in the dressing room, our Cleveland reporter was about to record pitcher Lopat when a stormy, defeated Yankee manager Casey Stengel stopped the proceedings. "Lopat ain't talking," he said. "I'm the manager of this ball club. It was a dirty trick they pulled with that cat. I ought to protest the whole game." 1951 will probably go down as the year America, once again, began sending her young people overseas. Once again, the transports went out to Korea, Japan, Okinawa, Hawaii, Indochina, to Alaska, the Canal Zone, to England and Germany and North Africa, to 100 different points on a smoldering globe. Americans prayed for peace, but began building and deploying the strength that means victory in war. 3 weeks ago, the 4th Infantry Division began moving from its home base at Fort Benning, Georgia, to its new base somewhere in Germany. We followed the 4th through every step of its 5,000 and some odd mile journey and recorded the sounds of the voyage and the feeling of the men who made the trip. What you're about to hear is the story of the 18,000 men of the 4th, the 1st American Division sent from the U.S. to join General Eisenhower's United European Command. Fort Benning, Georgia. The word to move has been around for some weeks. The training stopped. The packing began. The heavy tanks and anti-aircraft guns rolled onto freight cars and preceded the troops to the POE, point of embarkation. Now it is time for the men to leave. The march to the trucks, the hot, dusty ride to the station, the assignment to trains.
"All right, Sergeant, first class battle, if you grab your equipment, you're train 8. You're just this side of Sergeant Delgado. You have 26 men."
The long trip to the north, to Richmond, Washington, Philadelphia. Destination Camp Kilmer, near New Brunswick, New Jersey. The final processing for overseas duty, the forms, insurance, ID cards, the medical inspections, and inevitable shock. The briefing session. 18,000 men cannot be transported in one group, so the outfit arrives in waves. As soon as one contingent clears Kilmer and ships out, a second and third and fourth will take its place.
Bentley! Martin! Harris Eugene!
4 days is the average stay at Kilmer. 24 hours are on pass. The word comes through, passes at 1,700 today. The final brush of the shoes in the barracks. And off for New York City for that last fling in the States.
Hey, let's go!
For the past month, it's been one going-away splurge after another. On $80 a month, there's not much left for the big party in New York, but somehow the money is found. Corporal Edward H. Dickerson of Amarillo, Texas, and PFC Marvin A. Kress of Wingo, West Kentucky, went through New York and $100 together. We went along for the ride down Fifth Avenue in a taxi, now approaching the Washington Square Arch.
Dixon here that I'd spent already $100 before I ever got into the state of New York. It cost me $100 and I never had even been into the state.
Well, the only times that I'd been up here were to see the World Series in 41-2-3 whenever the Yankees played. We came up to see them.
They've closed every burlesque show here in town. The boys were sure disappointed about that. They were hunting them.
They go to the farewell party thrown by the Vanderbilt Hotel for the Ivy Division. IV, from the Roman numerals for four.
The years gone by, as quickly as the wind. Enjoy yourself, later than a day.
They ride the subways.
I find the subways in Wingo, Kentucky are somewhat different from this. The thing most that I can't figure out is who did all this digging.
They go up to the tower of the Empire State Building.
This is the highest. There's nothing this high in Texas, I'll say that.
I just wonder if I could see home in Kentucky from here.
That's the Hudson River over there.
Where's Brooklyn?
See the Statue of Liberty right out here?
Hey, Haynes, here's the Statue of Liberty.
I think the highest building in Arkansas, just 14 stories.
Not an oil well in town. I don't see how these people live.
And they wind up in a honky-tonk on Times Square. Amarillo, Texas makes time.
My name's Ed.
Well, hello.
How are you? Where are you from?
Montreal, Canada.
Oh, that's a long ways from my home. I'm from Texas.
No kidding.
Texas, big city. What do you do here in New York?
I'm looking around the big city.
Don't you think if we're going to be friends, I ought to know your name?
Well, it would help, wouldn't it?
It would help a lot, I think.
My name is Shirley.
Well, how are you, Shirley? We're shipping out Friday.
How can you dare to leave all those horses down in Texas?
Well, it was pretty hard. I left trails of tears from Texas to Georgia. Finally broke away.
It's a lot of tears. I hear Texas is a pretty big place.
Texas is a tremendous place, but I never saw anything like you in Texas.
Maybe it's not big enough, huh?
I don't think it is. I think Canada maybe is a better place.
Well,
what I was thinking is, since this is my last night in town and you seem to be here by yourself, we might make a night of it. Go out and have a few drinks and dance a while.
Final preparations. Briefing on the parade up Broadway. Assignments to ship and departure time. Final briefing.
Hold on! Double time in there. Let's go! Right, Eddie, man. This afternoon, there will be no passes until we get further notice. You wash your clothes. All of your dirty clothes, your fatigues, underclothes, particularly your belts. Belts are going to show tomorrow or the other day in the parade. Shine your brass. Get all your equipment lined up. Start and complete your packing tonight. That's all your whole baggage, your duffel bag.
From Kilmer to Manhattan, New York gives its traditional greeting. The spectators look on soberly. They seem happier about homecomings than departures. The hills and valleys of Broadway re-echo the sounds of the Fourth's own band. New York's Mayor Impellitteri bids them goodbye.
To each of you young men, I say, God be with you. Your nation and this, its greatest city, salute you.
Departure time. Pier 1, Staten Island. The lead ship, the General Alexander M. Patch of the Military Sea Transportation Service, 22,000 tons, 22 knot cruising speed, peacetime capacity, 1,500 troops. At the gangplank, checking the men aboard.
All right, when you get to the bottom of the gangplank, gentlemen, sound back with your first name and middle initial as I call your last name. When you get aboard, go into the hold, get on your sack, your baggage, and stay there. Allen.
Jackie.
Archer.
Wait a minute.
Manalos.
Brent.
Beckley.
Thomasy.
Begley.
Harmony.
Benjamin.
Further.
Up the gangplank. The band strikes up on the pier. The men are in good spirits. Ship, the last official visitors are cleared off.
Over the gangway. All ashore is going ashore. All ashore is going ashore. That's over the gangway.
Well, I wonder how they'll bring us back with a thick brass band. If you get back, you'd be damn lucky to get back in a rowboat.
Come on, just get top going. Hey, are we moving? Hey.
Oh, we're moving.
All you lucky people.
There we go, that's that.
Yeah, there she blows.
Yeah. Second time.
They listen for the song that spells goodbye. Down on the dock, as the ship slides free, they say goodbye. A few minutes out of the harbor, the normal ship routine is established. Policing, training, chow. Abandoned ship drill.
The next signal will be the abandoned ship signal. The signal consists of 7 short and 1 long on the bells and on the whistle. 7 short and a long on the bells and on the whistle. When you hear this signal, all hands will immediately proceed up to their abandoned ship station.
Second day out. Quarters inspection, no good. Troop Commander Lieutenant Colonel Wayne Winder sounds up.
The inspection today at 1300, I think, was lousy. Exception of one compartment, and that was number 8.
Down the line goes the word. First Sergeant Latman is grieved. He informs the 250 men in compartment C5 of this fact. The ventilator whines in the background.
Bringing this meeting to its third meeting, you all probably know what it's for. For one simple thing, the compartment, the cleanliness of the compartment, the troops themselves, how they conduct themselves, and so forth and so on. I orientated you men quite thoroughly on my second orientation of what was expected of each man in compartment C5. Each man had a specific job to do on his 10-day voyage on this vessel. Is that not right? You were well informed, well proofed, that there'll be no sleeping on your damn bunks with your shoes on. And yet we went around and found. We did not wake the man up. 10 to 15 and possibly 20 men with their damn shoes on. Now, if you men can't understand English, we can certainly keep you down in this compartment at C5 24 hours a day.
Third day out. KP, prepare the morning chow.
Duran, you give the eggs out. One of your potatoes here. One of you get on the mush. Got the coffee over there. We have a juice. And one of you give out the fresh milk we have this morning.